Just a few short years ago, the colorful NBC Peacock was looking discouragingly pale. The nation's first television network was on such a downhill slide that there were almost daily rumors of its demise or its imminent sale to one of a dozen prospective suitors. Then suddenly, as only a Hollywood or New York scriptwriter can do it, NBC began to show signs of life again. First came the downsizing of the company by its purchaser in 1986, the General Electric Corporation. Then came a diversification into cable television, including CNBC and America's Talking, and part interest in Court TV, American Movie Classics, and 17 other offerings. Next came a steady diversification abroad, culminating in this week's launching of CNBC Asia, based in Hong Kong. Along the way, the network reinvigorated its programming with fresh new offerings such as The Cosby Show, Cheers, Seinfeld, ER, Friends, and Dateline. NBC earned $400 million in profits for GE last year, and analysts are predicting the network will give leader ABC a run for its ratings in the fall. The man leading the revitalization of the Peacock network is 52-year-old Robert Wright. He came to NBC from General Electric Financial Services, a background that left no doubt as to his credentials as a bean counter. Yes. Sorry about that. Yes, he did some slashing and burning. But he also has been willing to make substantial investments in risky ventures, most of which have succeeded. It's not hyperbole to say Mr. Wright has set the stage for the Peacock to march proudly into the next century. The job has not been easy. When Mr. Wright started 8 years ago, he had a full head of hair. But the fruits of his labors are now paying off in all sorts of accolades. Within the past year, he has been honored by his college, his high school, and his elementary school. What happened to the nursery school? Mr. Wright and his wife, Suzanne, have received other gratifications over the past month. One of their daughters graduated from high school. Another completed her studies at Columbia University Graduate School, and their son graduated from Holy Cross. Today, we'll hear about the challenges facing the television industry from someone who knows what he's talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, the president of the National Broadcasting Company, Mr. Robert Wright.
Thank you, Bud. I have to set the record straight on one little thing. My son would probably be offended if he sees that, because he didn't go to Holy Cross. I did. I would have loved it if he did, but he didn't. He actually graduated from Colgate, and we don't hold that against him at Holy Cross. I think I should sit down after that wonderful introduction and just let the rest of this go and go right to questions, but unfortunately that's not part of the agenda. I also wish, and since I just heard Betty was explaining to me that John Major has essentially announced that he's stepping down as head of the government at some point, that you have Margaret Thatcher here next week. I think those tickets are going to be hard to come by. That's
sold out already.
Based on what she said before, when he was head of the government, my guess is it's going to be quite an exciting event. Well, let me get to some words that you kindly are going to give me the time to present, and I hope this is useful, and it certainly expresses an opinion that we at NBC have about some things that are very important to us. I guess I could open by saying what you already know. This is a time of great change. Technology is driving an awful lot of it, deregulation, but in reality it's technology that's driving it. And unfortunately, I think as a country we've always been quick to accept the fact that technology is a driver, and you can only hold it back so long, and to do so, to hold it back indefinitely, is to your own disadvantage. We certainly support that. Congress is also in the midst of the most sweeping revolution of television, of technology, and of communications in 50 years, and we certainly don't lose sight of that, and we've tried to participate. I have some challenges I want to talk about, but I also want to say very emphatically that what NBC supports, that we philosophically and economically and emotionally support high-definition television, digital broadcasting, free, universal, accessible broadcast television, efficient use of the spectrum, and when it makes sense, spectrum auctions. I applaud the sweep of regulatory changes that Congress is considering. But even as we embrace them, we must nurture and we must remember that even allowing competitors in, the government should be careful not to create either a business or regulatory environment that places free, universal, available broadcast television at a competitive disadvantage. I'd like to talk about two particular threats that are currently in front of Congress that relate to that. We've acted on our commitments to change, and I think Bud did an adequate job of mentioning the things that we've done, so I don't want you to think that our focus today indicates that we have only an agenda to serve in broadcast television. I think these comments become more credible because we have invested in so many other forms of communication, in cable and global and online services. So I think I can make these statements without saying that we're just protecting our only focus in life. We own and operate, as he said, 19 different cable services, or 21, some of which we own, some of which we own substantial portions of. We did start 2 days ago a live 24-hour service out of Hong Kong, or based out of Hong Kong, covering Asia, CNBC Asia, and that's made up of 12 and a half hours of live daily produced material on the Far East. We run on a live basis about 8 hours of programming coming out of CNBC in the United States, and the remaining between 2 and 3 hours a day out of Europe Business News. So it's a live 24 hours produced network. And we've got a similar issue in Europe. Only in Europe we started out with more of a general service, and we'll also do a business service. So we've tried to do an awful lot to take advantage of technology, deregulation, and a growing appetite for video services around the world. We've also entered new media, and we have many things that involve the digital age, NBC desktop, digital publishing, and data network. So we really are committed to be at the front of the communications parade and not at the back end. But as we push forward in those new endeavors, we don't want to lose sight of the extraordinary accomplishment and achievement that today's broadcast stations across the country represent. From the past 50 years, the United States has built the best broadcasting system in the world. It delivers free, local, and national programming to virtually every home in America. On a local level, stations provide regularly scheduled local news, weather, sports, and intense news coverage for local emergencies. On a national level, NBC provides many of the most watched and best produced news, entertainment, and sports programs. And at times of national emergency, such as the Oklahoma City bombing, we provide an instant, continuous news coverage for an entire nation. And all of that is available for free. Anyone who follows the broadcast industry knows that it is an industry of cycles. Right now, broadcast television and NBC are both having banner years. And even more important, the fundamentals of the business appear to be strong as well. Well, that's a change from a number of years ago. So what happened? Well, for one, advertisers have rediscovered broadcasting as the superb way to reach a broad national audience. And even more, they complement and they take advantage, and as others aim at our audience, competitors, broadcasters remain the very best way to build brand awareness, brand loyalty, and to introduce new products. Broadcasters command sizable audiences, and our unique blend of news, weather, sports, and localization will attract, in my opinion, bigger audience than pay services for some time to come, if broadcasting gets a fair shake from Washington. Well, let's try and describe some elements of that fair shake. Let's take a look at the spectrum issue. And before everybody's eyes glaze over, I assure you that spectrum decisions really do and will have a tremendous impact and effect on consumers when they turn on their sets in the future, and even the type of television set that they're going to be watching. First of all, spectrum is air. And without for the moment joining the debate on the virtues and vices of the many FCC regulations, I trust everyone will agree that the FCC has appropriately served as a spectrum traffic policeman, ensuring that one use, for instance, radio or cellular communications, does not interfere with other uses, such as television, and that different stations in a market or adjacent markets do not interfere with each other, and that every market and every home in the country has an opportunity to receive free television. Original broadcasters were granted licenses to use spectrum in return for investing and creating a privately funded national communication service for every community. They also had to embrace certain public interest obligations defined by statute. In television's infancy, huge economic and technical risks were taken, and over time, billions of dollars have been invested creating station and network businesses or purchasing businesses others had created. Today's broadcasters have paid for their air rights. They didn't pay the government, but they did pay in the open market for spectrum use. They took the risks and they ate the losses in the early years to create this excellent free television system. To understand this, let's look for a moment to the western expansion of this country. A series of homestead acts were passed that gave individuals federal land for free if they performed the public service of settling the land. Their land has been sold many times over. It would be ludicrous to suggest today that to help fix the federal budget deficit, the current owner should turn over that land to the government for auction. Equally absurd, some are suggesting that today's broadcasters now be forced to buy something they've already paid for. Broadcasters have taken years and years to establish their stations, programming, and their values. Today's broadcasting system works spectacularly well for the American people. It should not fall victim, illogically and unfairly, to the national need to balance the federal budget. The proposal that is actually part of the telecom reform bill that just passed in the Senate would throw broadcasters off the spectrum they use for local news gathering, making the equipment they currently use obsolete and seriously hurting their ability to provide on-the-spot coverage of local news events. The vacated spectrum would be auctioned off to reduce the deficit, but at what cost to the broadcasting system? The equipment has not even been invented to function in the newly assigned higher spectrum bands, nor does the bill compensate broadcasters for the cost of that relocation. Some are even suggesting that television broadcasters alone should be singled out in paying for spectrum use. Let me make an analogy of a policeman directing traffic at a major intersection. His job is to make sure cars don't run into each other, just as the FCC's job has been to ensure that users of the airwaves do not interfere with each other's signals. But imagine a local government official looking for a way to raise revenue arrives at the intersection. While waiting there, he sees a red car goes by, and he said, let's tax all red cars using this intersection. Why just the red cars? Well, they're the most visible cars. In addition, he decides to tax red cars not just to pay for the police officer, but also to use the tax to underwrite whole other areas of municipal services. Those proposing to tax only broadcaster spectrum may be under the mistaken view that other video and communication services, such as telephone, cable, cellular, DBS, and others, do not use the spectrum. But they do, just like broadcasters do. Even if the last link in the journey of a video program or a voice or data communication to the home is over a telephone or a cable wire, at some point it more than likely traveled via spectrum. Let me give you some facts which I hope will put this in perspective. The cable industry is licensed to use 5 times more frequencies than the television broadcasting industry. The two largest providers of long-distance telephone service are licensed to use three times the number of frequencies than the entire broadcast television industry. 86% of total spectrum is controlled solely by the federal government. The federal government shares control with the private sector for another 9%. In terms of the spectrum below 30,000 megahertz, which given today's technology is the most usable, the federal government has exclusive use of 37% of the frequencies and shares use in another 31. In contrast, broadcasters use a relatively small portion of the spectrum, especially given the scope of the public that they serve. VHF stations use only 0.02% of total available spectrum. UHF stations use another 0.0001% of the spectrum. Together, broadcast television accounts for less than 0.2% of all available spectrum to transmit TV signals to the home. At that intersection, just 2 of every 1,000 cars would be red. If more spectrum is needed for emerging technologies or to auction off for revenue, we urgently suggest that we look at the government-controlled spectrum. A recent study by the Progress and Freedom Foundation reported that, quote, large portions of the spectrum go underutilized or vastly underutilized, and many of the wasted bands are under the control of the federal government, unquote. A recent Department of Commerce report on spectrum utilization identified three frequency bands currently used by the federal government as prime targets for relocation and to commercial use and potential auction. The 93 Budget Act commenced the process of liberating spectrum from government control to be made available for commercial uses. Acceleration and significant expansion of that effort should be a cornerstone of efforts to identify additional spectrum for new uses and to raise revenues. Government bureaucrats have built entire careers on hoarding spectrum. That should cease. The government should be willing to reduce its dependency on spectrum, just as private sector users have done so over the years. The government's motherlode of available spectrum should be carefully mined before the Congress trains its sight on the spectrum utilized by broadcasters to provide the public with free over-the-air service. But if spectrum use is to be taxed, then all users should be taxed as well. Radio, telephone, cable, cellular, DBS, CBs, X-ray machines, auto-focusing cameras, and garage door openers, all of which use the available spectrum under license. But it gets more interesting. I find even more puzzling what some in Washington want to do concerning the nation's 200 million television sets. First, some background on high-definition television, or digital television, which in the future will provide a dramatically improved television service of motion picture quality. About 8 years ago, at the specific direction of Congress and the FCC brought together broadcasters, manufacturers of television sets, government groups, and other interested parties to develop a grand design for a smooth transition to new advanced television. They looked at consumer issues, policy issues, economic concerns, and technological obstacles. It was not done casually. There were tens of thousands of hours of research, conferences, testimony, public hearings. It has been an ongoing process over 8 years, which has led to a plan for a smooth and orderly transition. We estimate that in response to this congressional and FCC directive, more than $500 million has been spent by U.S. industry to develop digital television. From the very beginning, it was understood by everyone, FCC, broadcasters, and the Congress, that broadcasters' existing spectrum was technically unable to transmit high-definition television, and that a second channel in different frequencies was needed to transition from the old service to the new service. As a result, all broadcast stations will be temporarily loaned a transitional channel to broadcast their programming in digital format. It will be necessary to have two broadcast channels for a period of time so that programs can be broadcast both in digital format for those viewers who choose to invest in new digital televisions, as well as the current analog format for the 200 million sets that are currently in use in our homes today,
and they will not be able to process the new digital signal. In Washington, for example, WRC would continue to broadcast on Channel 4, but for those consumers who bought the digital sets, WRC would have to broadcast on a second channel, Channel 34, to send that signal to their homes. Once the transition is completed, all broadcasts will be transmitted digitally, and the spectrum that broadcasters currently use will be returned to the government. The newly usable spectrum can then be auctioned by the government for new uses, raising new revenues. The consensus estimates by those who have studied this is that a sensible transition will take at least 15 years. As a point of reference, 10 years after color television was introduced, only 20% of the country had opted to buy a color set. As a result of budget needs today, some have floated the idea of ignoring all the planning to date and accelerating the transition so that the analog spectrum can be auctioned off early. They want to auction off the current spectrum in 7 years and eliminate the current signal 3 years after that. Now, don't get me wrong, NBC continues to lead the industry in the introduction of new technology, just as we did with the introduction of television, color television, stereo broadcast. We are committed to digital high-definition television. But think for a moment about how long this process should reasonably take to avoid rendering tens of millions of television sets useless. The television networks between us must invest more than $1 billion to produce and transmit television programs in digital high-definition form. The 1,500 local stations must invest $12 billion to produce and transmit high-definition television, and consumers must buy new sets. When they become available, high-definition television sets are estimated to cost, in today's dollars, $2,500 a piece. Converter boxes for existing sets, we estimate, will be priced around $500. To give a sense of the size of investment required of the American public at today's prices, to put a converter box on every set in America would cost $100 billion. Well, this may be an economic windfall for pay television services and converter box manufacturers all over the world. The cost would fall squarely on the backs of American consumers. Since the FCC has not yet set the standards for all of this equipment, any assumption that the transition will realistically be accomplished by 2005 is implausible. The most successful consumer electronic appliance to hit the market, the VCR, had only a 43% penetration after 10 years. Let me make it clear that every single American television in America today, all 200 million, will be obsolete the day that the analog signal is cut off. So the issue isn't whether it's going to happen, the issue is when it will happen. And how long do people get notice, and how long can they use what they currently have? You don't buy a major appliance, whether it be a toaster, a television, a dishwasher, thinking that the government might pass a law requiring you or making it happen that you would have to throw the appliance in the junk heap. This is what will happen if the transition to digital broadcasting is unreasonably accelerated without basing the transition on what the U.S. consumer actually chooses to do. This is essentially a $100 billion tax, and whether it fits the exact definition of a tax or not, the effect is the same, $100 billion plus tax on consumers. We are totally committed to high-definition television. It only makes sense for us. We don't want to force viewers to choose an array of options offered by pay service providers because the quality of our picture is not the best it can be. We will have to offer the best picture. We understand that. That's the nature of our business. I understand the need for additional government revenues as well, and I strongly support a balanced budget, and everyone has to be prepared to do their share. But in looking for new revenues, we must not throw out good public policy, years of planning, and most of all, common sense. In addition to appropriate spectrum use, there's one other issue that I'd like to bring to your attention. It has to do with proprietary navigational systems to be employed by our telephone and cable competitors that make it very difficult for a viewer to find free broadcast television. Broadcasters depend on large audiences. That's what gives us the ability to finance the system. Advertisers pay the bills. Our ability to attract large audiences depends upon a consumer who wants to watch our programming, and he has to be able to find it. Now easy access does not guarantee us anything. Only attractive programming brings in a large audience. But attractive programming will gain us nothing if the audience can't find it, or if viewers tire before they have clicked through multiple program menus, one or more of which diverts them to a pay service or services owned by the telco or cable operator. And access is threatened. If any of you have been in a, stayed in a hotel lately, you may have caught a glimpse of what will be the future of television in your home. Virtually all the hotels have sold the rights to television in their rooms to third parties. Hotels no longer buy television sets or program them. Third parties pay for the right to put select programming in the rooms. These third parties have quickly determined which programs they can charge the most for, which will generate the most revenue and get the biggest return. So those programs or advertisements for them are the very first things you see when you turn on your television. And whether they be whether you're looking for movies, and you'll normally find a large supply of R-rated and unrated movies that are featured, wrestling, maybe videos about weight gain or weight loss, or whatever other, they're all pay services. Viewers have to work to find their local free station. As choices increase, the navigational systems of the future will have strong proprietary incentives to hide free services on a distant limb of a navigational tree and to try to steer consumers toward pay services as they travel along those branches. Navigational systems and complicated program menus threaten broadcasters' ability to remain universally available as providers of free news, sports, and entertainment. Let me assure you, there will be no other free video in the home. All of the emerging competitors, cable, telco, DBS, online computers, are exclusively pay services. The competitive survival of broadcasting should be based on the quality of our programming and services, not the creativity or craftiness of a navigational designer. Both the Senate and House telecommunications bills address the issue of fair and easy access in very different ways. It will be critical for the Congress to write the strongest possible legislative assurances that consumers have the same easy access to free over-the-air broadcasting that they have today. And may the best programming win. Think of the worst-case scenario, a future in which discriminatory spectrum fees drive viewers from free television to pay television, in which tens of millions of television sets are made obsolete overnight by government fiat, and consumers are forced to pay billions to upgrade or replace their sets, in which quality television is available only for a price, and the best universally available broadcast system in the world is dismantled and destroyed. This is certainly a future we can avoid, and I have faith that we will avoid it. It's my hope that broadcasters, working with Congress and the FCC, can offer every home in the United States the opportunity to receive a digital motion picture quality television picture free. It is also my hope that we can avoid the shoals of prejudicial navigational systems. If we're successful, even in the vastly competitive marketplace of today and the future, of the next century, then free over-the-air broadcasting, universally accessible broadcasting, will survive and thrive. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Now the hard part. Is NBC still up for sale? Why? Why not? And if it is, who are you talking to most seriously?
The answer is it's not up for sale. We're doing just fine, and we like it just fine.
Tim Russ is very pleased about that. Let's go on to some legislation. Critics of the telecommunications bill in Congress say that the bill would allow the TV networks to become news and entertainment monopolies, even more so, because it would free you to buy up TV, radio, and newspaper companies around the country. Indeed, Congressman Ed Markey has said that the new bill, quote, will make Citizen Kane look like an underachiever, unquote. What is the prospect out there that this is going to open the door to further consolidation of media interests?
Well, the reality is that the bills, both in the Senate and the House, open up video programming to enormously very large new competitors. Telco is brought in. Cable is released from some of the onerous and difficult regulations that it has. And the anticipation is that there will be many, many video services to the home in addition to the ones you currently have. And in that prospect, at the present time, the various bills provide lots of cross-ownership opportunities for all parties. I think the rationale is pretty sound. It's not one that we created, but it's basically let's do everything we can to enhance as much technological advancement, and if we see we're going to get into problems later, we'll review it. I think, quite frankly, the House bill, the proposed bill, has a review period, as a matter of fact, asking both the FCC and the Justice Department to review situations from time to time that may lead to the very issue that that question addresses. As far as broadcasters, the irony is that the owning of television stations is the only area in all of the bills that has any limitation whatsoever. There's a limitation in the Senate bill of proposed of 35% of the country, and the House as a 35 going to 50. There is no limitation in terms of cable. There is no limitation in terms of telco. There's no limitation on any other of the video competitors as to how much of the country they could serve, how many of the services they could own, etc. So I find that kind of ironic, given the fact that the one they're limiting is the one that's free. And the ones that they're not limiting are the ones that are all pay services. So I kind of think we have our priorities backwards. This is the rare example where you would think from a political standpoint, the free service is the one you would want to do everything possible to keep active and to allow the pay services to compete on the basis that people are going to pay for them, as opposed to trying to make it easier for the pay services to be successful at potentially at the expense of economic success for the free services.
The bill that just cleared the Senate would require TV manufacturers to install a, quote, choice chip, unquote, in their sets, so parents can block out shows that are violent or sexually explicit. Do you think that's a good idea? And you might as well go on to comment on sex and violence in television and Hollywood and anywhere else you want to take it on, but Senator Dole has been very popular with that.
Well, the question of sex and violence is easy. I'm for one and against the other. speaking for NBC, and I think I can say this broadly for broadcasters, but I'll keep it to ourselves because we have appropriate control over our own. We really have, there has never been a period in the modern era of television where we have so little material that could be deemed violent on the air. We've made enormous strides, a lot of it to public pressure, a lot of it to congressional pressure, granted, a lot of it FCC pressure, but also the reality is we pay a lot of attention to what viewers want and the kinds of audiences that we serve and families and homes and so forth. We have to pay a lot of attention to that. So the issue isn't really a problem for us. So I'll distance myself a little bit from that concern. As far as the general topic of the V chip or the chips, I think that's going to be a gold mine for lawyers. I think that is just going to result in endless litigation, and I think they're going down a First Amendment path, which is eventually going to lead to a closed door.
So you feel that any mechanism to give viewers an option of screening out sex and violence?
I just said that the discussions that are underway would seem to be leading in a direction that is going to just create an awful lot of litigation. In the end, people have to make the choices that they feel comfortable with. And I think broadcasters, by and large, have eliminated the kind of material which is the focus of these discussions. And then pay services can be dealt with in a different manner. But it isn't really my issue.
All right. How about this? The Federal Communications Commission recently proposed issuing content quotas to TV stations, requiring them to air as many as 7 hours each week of children's programming. What's your reaction to that?
The office
Well, children's programming has always been part of the broadcaster pact, both written and unwritten, and public service. So I certainly don't have a negative view of that. I think when you get to the issue of quantification and you start creating issues involving hours or specific time periods and things of that nature, I think are going too far. I think that becomes to be content regulation, and I probably would say the same thing, that that approach, if followed through in a dramatic manner, is just going to lead to a lot of litigation